You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Bibione.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel.
And we are joined for the first time this Giro d'Italia by veteran Velo News correspondent Andy Hood.
How are you doing, Lionel? Thanks for having me.
You have to ask him now, Hoodie, where we are in Italian.
Dove stai?
That's a new variation.
Okay, correct. Okay, fine. Where are we? Well, we're next to the fairground in Bibione.
It's, you weren't very impressed with Bibione, were you?
No, well, I looked at the map. I thought seafood restaurants and a lovely sort of beach vista. I didn't think sort of cross between Blackpool and Coney Island by the sea.
Former home of the now defunct Liquigas team. Well, it's very, was very close to here. And home, former home, or was he born there? No, I think he lives here. The Delfino di Bibione, the Dolphin of Bibione, Franco Pellizzotti, who was at the finish. Of course, he rides for Androni Sidamec now, who weren't invited to the Giro d'Italia. And he's looking more and more like Guy Fawkes every single day.
Well, I have to say, I was disappointed by Bibione, and not just because I don't like fairgrounds. That's just something, just one of those things I don't like. Add it to the long list.
It was
list
a bit of a circus out there on the road, though, wasn't it? The stay today was, it had a little bit of the fairgrounds about it.
It did indeed. Well, let's crack on with the tale of the Tappa, stage 12 of the Giro from Noali to Bibione, 182 kilometres, about as flat as you can get in a Grand Tour. We started off at 14 metres, rose to 38 metres, and finished at 2 metres above sea level. Andre Greipel of Lotto Soudal won his third stage of the Giro on his last day in the race. It wasn't a very exciting day's racing at all, really, although there was a little bit of shenanigans at the start. Daniel Oss of BMC attacked with Matteo Trentin of Etics Quickstep after 5 kilometres. But 5 kilometres later, Trentin decided it wasn't worth the effort and sat up. Oss pressed on his own until Mirko Maestri of Bardiani finally got across to him, and that formed a two-man lead group. But they never really got a lead above more than about two and a half minutes. On the approach to Bibione, which the race finished with a funky circuit going all the way round the houses, and the jury announced that the general classification times would be taken when they went through the finish line with 8 kilometres to go, even though at that stage it had been raining quite heavily early on, even though at that stage the finish was dry. Anyway, with 22 kilometres to go, Oss and Maestri were caught, and that set up quite a peculiar finish because with the times neutralised, we had the sight of just 25, 30 riders sprinting while everyone else sat up safe in the knowledge that their GC times were secure. No change to the jerseys. Bob Jungels is in pink. Andre Greipel is in red but won't wear it tomorrow, and I assume the red jersey won't be on the road tomorrow morning. Damiano Cunego still in blue, and Jungels holds the white, but that's being worn by Davide Formolo. Tomorrow's a tough stage with 4 climbs and 2 particularly tricky descents. So the GC race really begins tomorrow. Meanwhile, at the Tour of California, got into a little bit of trouble because I didn't mention that Ben King had won a stage. But to bring you up to date with what's happening over there, Peter Sagan, the world champion, won his second stage of the race.
Hoodie, the riders go home after about 12 stages. You fly in.
I just got here for the good bit. I got in yesterday for the first stage of this year's Giro. You know, for me, I love the Giro d'Italia. It's my favorite race of the year, favorite stage race of the year. I think that's true for most people I talked to that have either been here, covered it, watched it, raced it. You know, it's the race, I think, that most reflects its host country. You know, I think that the Giro is just as chaotic as Italy is and just as colorful and wonderful. I've often wondered, like, what it must be like for these Italian guys to race in their home country, and they go through the hometowns, everything's in pink. I mean, they're the heroes of the day. Tosato went through his hometown today, I think, or yesterday, maybe it was. And it just has that special flair that other big races just don't have anymore these days.
So do you get grousing, people grumbling about you arriving late, not really respecting the race, in the same way that the Italians got very, very hot and bothered? They were frothing with discontent about the likes of Andre Greipel leaving and heading straight to Venice Airport, I presume, after the stage today.
Yeah, that was kind of funny to see some of the blowback that Greipel was getting, even though he said he respects the Giro. I think he came in here not really expecting even to win maybe one stage. He got 3. It just shows, I think, the character of Greipel, man. He's a tough guy, but kind of hinted a little bit there, saying that he feels like he doesn't get the respect he deserves. You know, doesn't really say that, kind of let down his guard a little bit. Because you think when you talk to Greipel's teammates, they say he's a great guy, you know, funny, hardworking, you know, he deserves all the success he's had the last couple of years.
Well, he certainly used his experience, didn't he, to win the sprint. Lotto Soudal did a great job to lead him out in this sort of weird mini peloton. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But he talked about the finish because he beat Caleb Ewan, the young Australian rider with Orica Greenedge, and Greipel certainly moved from one side of the road or from the middle of the road towards the right hand, his right hand side, closing up to the barriers. And it was a win for experience. Greipel said afterwards that, you know, he'd noticed the wind was coming off the left when they hit that part of the circuit the first time round. But I bumped into Caleb Ewan after the finish line, so let's just hear what his verdict was on Greipel's manoeuvre.
It was a really technical circuit, and I'm used to that kind of racing in the crits in Australia. Luca put me perfectly behind Ryan Greipel in the sprint, and I think he could see me coming, and he closed in on me towards the fence, but I don't know how close I would have come to him if he didn't do that, but it was pretty disappointing that he did. It ruined my line for the sprint, and you know, maybe I would have beaten him, maybe I wouldn't have. I felt good. And it was just disappointing to have my run cut off short when I was coming around him. I wouldn't say it's smart, but I guess it is smart for his sake, because, you know, I was coming at him pretty fast, and he did stop my line of speed. So I guess it was a smart move by him, but I think it is a little bit incorrect. I'm not sure yet. Now I speak to the directors. The plan was for me to only stage 2, stage 12. Yeah, we'll see. You know, I'm still feeling good, but... you know, I'm still young, so maybe it's just time to stop before I dig myself into too much of a hole.
Well, there were quite veiled hints there from Caleb Ewan in the circumstances. There wasn't a lot of complaint, remonstration from him. And I actually think that in these cases on the road, in the last 200 metres, 100 metres, it probably helps if you're trying to get an opponent disqualified if you do make a bit of a song and dance, and if you do throw your arms up and shout and scream. And Ewan didn't really do that. And obviously he's a much younger rider than Andre Greipel. And the sort of hierarchy there dictates that a younger rider doesn't raise too many objections when an established statesman of sprinting like Greipel does something which might be borderline irregular. Or I think you, Hoodie, thought that the way Greipel sprinted was completely by the book.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought once he was first to that corner, he opened up his sprint. He had that line, so it was up for Ewan to either come around him on the left side, because Greipel said that he didn't do, I don't think, anything I saw to shut him down. It wasn't like he came from the middle once Ewan was next to him and tried to shut him into the walls. And Greipel has a reputation of being a clean sprinter. I remember, I think it was last year's tour, that Cavendish even thanked Greipel for keeping that door open for him to win that stage. And Greipel said after the race today, he goes, "I've been a racer for a long time. I'm not going to open up that fence." But I don't think he shut it down.
Yeah, I mean, in sprinting, to sort of twist the phrase, possession is 9/10 of the law. Once you're in front, you more or less can do what you want, really. And he, although he moved across, he was keeping a consistent line. And as you say, Hoodie, Ewan had to come round the long way into the wind. Smart riding by Greipel, and a lesson learned by Caleb Ewan.
Well, I think that's the operative term, Lionel, lesson learned. We said earlier in the Giro that those who have seen Caleb Ewan and watched him closely over the last year have suggested that the one thing that's lacking in his repertoire, in his armoury at the moment, is that real aggression, the ability. Well, you can certainly dart in and out of gaps, but sometimes there is simply no substitute for physical force and real just assertiveness. And that is probably what he has lacked at times in this Giro d'Italia. It's kind of been a frustrating 2 weeks for him, in the sense that he hasn't really had an open road yet to really show us what he can do. And that's not to say it's been a wasted experience, because I think he's leaving the race tonight as well. He will have learnt a lot, but we haven't seen a lot of what we expected to see from him when he was being hyped at the start of the season.
Hard for Caleb Ewan, though, who's about half the width of Andre Greipel, to bully Andre Greipel. I mean, you know, he's not nicknamed the gorilla for nothing, is he? I mean, when he gets sprinting, he's a big unit to get round. And
well, it'll be interesting over the next few years to see whether the bigger, more powerful sprinters, they continue to dominate. And, you know, we had a period with Mark Cavendish, who was a different kind of sprinter, who was able to dominate. But increasingly over the last few years, not just based on the results, but you watch the sprints and you wonder, you know, how one of these smaller guys, these kind of, you know, you and these pocket rocket sprinters are ever going to be able to really stamp their authority on sprinting again. And, you know, Giant Alpecin have got a rider waiting in the wings, Max Valscheid, who is their would-be successor to Kittel, who's a very similar kind of rider, huge, you know, 6 foot plus, and sprinting really has gone that way, hasn't it?
It has indeed. Well, what do we make of Andre Greipel's decision to go home? It's complicated by the fact that he's got such a lead in the red jersey. He did say in the press conference that it was always a plan, regardless, to go home after 12 stages. So it's not like, you know, he's you know, sprung it on anybody. I don't know in these circumstances whether the Giro organisers would be tipped off in advance that, look, we'll do the first 12 days with Greipel, whether it's a surprise to them. We'll have to ask and find out, perhaps. But is it disrespecting the race to go home with three wins in the bag? Or is it really only disrespecting the race because he's wearing one of the jerseys?
Yeah, I don't think it's disrespectful for Greipel to go home. I remember he broke his couple of ribs, the Tour of Algarve, back in February. For him to even be in this race and to have performed as well as he's done, I think, is showing in a certain way respect for the Giro. For him to leave in the jersey, I mean, yeah, he can maybe fight on, but then it might handicap his recovery going into the Tour. He said he has more goals later in the season. For him to come back and be really in top shape in the Tour is what really matters for him as a sponsor. That's the way it is for the sport.
And I think Grand Tour organisers also have to acknowledge and take stock of the fact that by loading so much drama and so many mountains to the back end of their race, you know, they run this risk. And if we were to reverse things and put and all the mountaintop finishes were at the front of the race, we would probably see some pure climbers pulling out after 10 days as well. And I don't think really we should be demonising sprinters. I don't think that's really fair.
Well, you make that point, Daniel. I mean, three very difficult days now, then a rest day, then another climbing day on Tuesday. The next opportunity for the sprinters is Wednesday. It's a lot of mountains to battle over. And then you carry that red jersey all the way to Turin. Like you say, Andy, It's probably a step too far for Greipel considering the start to the year he's had.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to SIS for sponsoring the cycling podcast while we're at the Giro d'Italia. In return for that sponsorship, or as part of that sponsorship, they are offering our listeners 20% off all their products, energy bars, drinks and gels. Go to www.scienceinsport.com and enter the code SIS20, that's SIS20, and you can get a nice discount on all of their products at checkout. Andy, you've flown into the race just as the mountains hot up, and you're a native of Spain these days, lived in Spain a long time, and Movistar, the big Spanish team, are sitting second and third overall with Andre Amador ahead of Alejandro Valverde, who is the team leader. They're around, well, Amador's around 26 seconds off Bob Jungels at the moment. Valverde's about a minute and seven back, I think. Is this boiling up to be a Giro that's falling in Alejandro Valverde's direction?
I would agree with that. I think there's been some polemic that somehow there's going to be some fallout inside Movistar between Amador kind of doing some kind of Wild West racing the last couple of days, doing some attacking. And there were some suggestions in the Italian media there's going to be some conflict inside the Movistar house. But that's a team that really works well together. And from what I was talking to Nzue yesterday and Roy Sutherland, and they were both saying that the whole team is behind, 100% behind Alejandro. There's no sort of rift between those guys. Amador is still thinking he might be able to get the podium, but the team is riding 100% for Alejandro at this point.
Does that mean they will sacrifice Amador if necessary? Because it didn't look like they were completely behind Valverde yesterday. I mean, it looked like they were hedging their bets a little bit, or at least keeping another card up their sleeve.
That's what they are trying to do, is kind of play have the extra card up the sleeve in terms of, you know, last year they did it at the Tour. It worked out pretty well with Nairo second, Alejandro third. It's always better to have a team to have two GC options up the road anyway. There's not many teams that have that kind of depth to pull it off. But I think from my point of view, I think Alejandro he's in the driver's seat of this Giro. I think he's going to win because I think everyone talks about how Valverde always attacks, but he's completely changed his racing style. He doesn't attack ever anymore. He attacks and when it counts. So Valverde's a much smarter rider now. He'll be following wheels, he'll be staying with Nibali, and then it'll come down to those two guys, I think, who has the legs to finish the thing off.
And you mentioned Unzue. He's also a very conservative tactician, isn't he? A good tactician, but as we saw at the Tour last year, people were imploring Movistar to attack and imploring Quintana to attack, but that tactic wouldn't really have suited Quintana, and Unzue was pretty steadfast in saying, no, we just have to follow the wheels and then try and hit Froome with a knockout blow at the end, Alpe d'Huez, and that's almost what they did.
Yeah, and that's what I think what they'll do in this Giro. It's still so far, we're not even into the mountains yet, and those guys know it's all about just saving the matches for what really counts. I think could be tricky for, I think, Valverde and the climbing time trial on Sunday. We'll see how he does. I mean, of course, he's a climber, it favors him, but Almador could get some time on Valverde that day. We'll just see how good Almador's legs are really once we get in the big mountains. I mean, last year he was almost on the podium fourth, but I think he was 9 minutes back. You know, he's not going to be at the same level as Nibali and some of the other top climbers.
And also, I think the way Almador has attacked, it's been very much attacks as part of a team plan, really. You know, he hasn't been attacking. I mean, obviously, attacking to maybe gain a pink jersey the other day, but it wasn't the sort of attack that was to try and undermine Valverde, I didn't think.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I was talking to Roy Sullivan the other day, and he said that, he goes, I don't know, he says, he didn't know if it's because they're all kind of the Hispanic Latino kind of thing, or if it's just how Movistar develops their team. He says it's the most cohesive team he's ever been on. It feels like a family, he said. He goes, these guys are really tight. Yeah, they're all friends within the team. You're not going to see some sort of dogfight between an Aru and a Landa or a Froome and a Wiggins.
And how does Carlos Betancur fit in? I mean, first of all, how does he fit into his jersey? Because I saw him this morning, and he's in extraordinary shape. I mean, he's obviously going pretty well now. He's obviously lost a lot of the weight that he needed to lose, but he's an extraordinary-looking bike rider, tiny little stubby legs. He looked as though he'd hired his bike from, I don't know, it was kind of like a Boris bike that you hire for an hour in London. I mean, sit up and beg. And how the guy is racing the Giro d'Italia and how he'll be decisive in the final week, I don't know. But that's very likely, isn't it? Because he does seem to have found some form again.
Yeah. I mean, he won that stage at the Vuelta Castellón coming into where Valverde won the overall. But Bananito, they call him. Yeah, I think he'd kind of...
What's that mean?
Little banana. We don't know how little this banana is, but hey, that's...
Little banana split or just a banana?
Just a banana, yeah. No, but, you know, he's been saying that, you know, he's finally found his professional home in Movistar. I mean, when he was on AG2R, you can imagine what a weird vibe that must have been for some Colombian kid, really from a small family. I mean, his family they grow bananas. That's how he got his nickname. And he's really tight with his family, and I think he just kind of got lost. He had some problems with his weight. I think he was really battling depression, really. And... you know, Bartoli is his agent, and so I think they worked hard to get him back, get his head back in the game, control his weight. Because when I saw him show up at the Vuelta a Burgos last year, I mean, he was bigger than me. And that's saying a lot.
But it's remarkable, isn't it? Because Betancur was a sensation at Paris-Nice a couple of years ago, and it looked like he was going to be joining Quintana as the almost as his equal as the big Colombian hope, because his acceleration on those climbs was remarkable, particularly on that, I can't remember exactly where we were in Fayence, I think, the very steep climb that he really dominated on. And he's gone backwards, and maybe now he's moving forwards a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also a question perhaps of just resetting the odometer with him, in a sense of, you know, he comes into Movistar, there's no pressure on him at all. They're just letting him ride in to get back his form. You know, the plan is to take him to the Vuelta this fall and just kind of see what he does. No pressure here to really ride. He's just here to help the team as much as he can and just kind of take those steps to regain his confidence as a rider.
Well, he's got the extra large jersey to fit the bidons up when he's dropping back the bottles, hasn't he?
Talking of food and drink, Hoodie, I know you were pretty anxious to get away early tonight because your hotel, one of those rare occasions when the hotel is near the finish, so... A full evening of festivities, or a full evening of studying the form and studying the profile of tomorrow's stage, more like, because it's a crucial one, isn't it?
Yeah, really, really. It's a question of, you know, reading the race book. You know, luckily we actually my troop we're traveling with, we stay with the same hotel with RCS, so you know we're right there every night, early to dinner, and we stay all the way through dessert. Especially my travel mate Gregor Brown. He's a big fan of the Giro as well.
You do realise this is being broadcast to the public, Hoodie. Anyway, we'll let you go. Enjoy your dinner. Try not to get any wine on the road book overnight. In the meantime, Daniel, I can hear a foreboding noise.
Era bella, aveva occhi verdi come i boschi che avevamo risalito quel giorno, lineamenti dolci e una voce che pareva lei sì cantare.
She was beautiful. She had eyes as green as the forest through which we'd climbed that day. Soft features and a voice that seemed to sing.
Well, Lionel, I thought we'd had enough of a break. We'd had 2 or 3 days without anything raunchy or racy from Nibali's autobiography. Of course, I'm reading a line or a passage every day from Nibali's autobiography, Di Furore e Lealtà, which we're trying to kind of tell the story of the Giro through lines from that book. And yeah, it was sort of post-watershed stuff again, wasn't it?
My delicate ears, Daniel. I mean, we're going to have to start putting an age rating on this. You know, you've got to be over 41 to listen to it.
Chira, we are reading Nibali's autobiography, and there's quite a lot of stuff about intimate relationships. Very romantic, isn't it?
Yes, it's very romantic. But my problems about Nibali's book, listeners, that I was obliged to read it, because I must confess that I have this custom. Normally, I don't read books about sports. No, because you know that I'm involved in sport all day long. You understand that for me, it become really, really annoying, you know, boring to read, but in this case I was obliged to read it.
Chiro appeared as if by magic there. I didn't even introduce him, did I?
He did. If you're in any doubt, we've been joined by Chiro Scognamiglio of La Gazzetta dello Sport.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Eurosport, who are sponsoring the cycling podcast, not just at this Giro, but all season long. And one of the things that they are supporting is the Pedaleur de Charme Award, the indefinable Pedaleur de Charme Award. And Richard Moore, our team captain, is back in London watching the Giro on television, and he's gathering together all the nominations on social media, and he is putting them together and coming up with the daily award winner. So let's hear his verdict for today.
Who would be doing the talking? Would it be that man we rumoured was going to Hollywood? People put Sato, he's one of the bosses in the peloton nowadays. Because
thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring our daily Pedaleur de Charme Award. That was involves giving a t-shirt to a rider every day. Great job by Daniel and Lionel today to give it to Lee Howard of I Am Cycling. Well, there was a clear favourite for me today, Simone Pitelli. It might have been the Lamprey rider who at one point ate an energy bar, and rather than toss his wrapper to the side of the road like so many riders do, he went to the trouble of putting it in his jersey, and I thought that deserved Pedaleur de Charme. Not entirely sure which rider it was, so Dan Lloyd thought it was Pitelli, but that's to be confirmed. Let's find out who it was and give him a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. In the meantime, today's Pedaleur de Charme, well, I feel a little bit compromised here because a little bit of pressure has been applied. This is a bit like Gazprom getting an invitation, a wild card to the Giro. You feel that there's more to it than just sporting reasons. And today, a bit of pressure has been put on me to award the Pedaleur de Charme to the rider whose name you heard at the start there from the lips of Rob Hatch on Eurosport, Filippo Pozzato. A mysterious phone call last night, pressure was put on me to name Pozzato as today's Pedaleur de Charme for reasons I don't fully understand. But anyway, Pozzato is today's Pedaleur de Charme.
Well, a nice touch there from Richard to nominate the Lamprey rider who put his energy gel wrapper in his pocket instead of throwing it on the ground. That's certainly to be applauded because it sets a good example for sportive riders all over the country, all over Europe, all over the world, not to throw their litter away after they've had something to eat while riding. But the staggering news, I mean, we need to break this to him this evening or first thing tomorrow, as soon as possible. Filippo Pozzato has won something in this Giro d'Italia.
Well, Lionel, I don't think you actually need to break the news to him because a very curious thing happened this morning. I was at the Southeast, that's Pozzato's team bus. I was at their bus and he was surrounded by young ladies, as is usually the case with Pozzato. But he also seemed to know already that he was going to win today's Pedaleur de Charme jersey. Now, I'm not sure how that's possible. I know there were some strange betting patterns today in Singapore in the Far East that are now being investigated, but that is an extraordinary revelation.
Well, I knew that as soon as the Pedaleur de Charme Award came to Italy, there'd be allegations of match fixing.
Well, I agree with Pippo. Is the pedaler de charme for excellence. I mean, maybe the best one. And I know, Daniel, that he told you that I'm obsessed by him. It's true? Listeners, it's true. Yes. Because, as I already had the occasion to tell only for you, only on our marvelous podcast, is that Filippo is my soul sister. So how could be obsessed by him? Yes, I am. It's not shame for me.
Right, Chiro, enough ridiculous chat. We need to get on with the serious business of the race very quickly, because I know you're a man in demand. Tomorrow, big stage finishes in Cividale del Friuli. Some very difficult climbs towards the end, very difficult descents. It could be an opportunity for Lo Squalo, the shark, particularly the last descent towards Cividale del Friuli. It's technical. Could be good for an attack?
Well, I'm not sure, and I explain why. Because in my opinion, in these last years, in the descent, the way of riding on Vincenzo is a little bit more conservative than it was in the past. Certainly last year, when he won the Tour of Lombardy, he realized a great attack in the descent. But in a Grand Tour, a race of 3 weeks, it's a little bit different. So, I mean, I'm not sure that he will go to take a lot of risk in the descent. I'm not sure.
And how about Bob Jungels? We're going to hear in a minute from Bob Jungels, direct sportif at Etics Quickstep, the Italian director, Davide Bramati, who considers himself the Jose Mourinho of cycling. First of all, we'll go on to Jungels in a moment, but is that justified? Is Bramati the Mourinho of cycling?
Not really, in my opinion. No, not really, because I can't imagine two persons as different as Mourinho and Bramati, so not the correct definition for me.
Do you want to elaborate, or should we move straight on to Jungels? Let's move straight on to Jungels.
Well, about Jungels, I think that certainly, he's very competitive, but in my opinion, he won't be competitive till the pink jersey in Touring. Certainly, I mean, it's only 23 years old. I think that in the big mountains, he should lose a lot of time. So, maybe top 5, top 3, not pink jersey for him in Touring. This is my bet now.
Well, I did speak to Bramati about his prospects for the rest of the Giro a couple of days ago after the mountaintop finish in Sestola. And here's what Bramati said.
Yeah, every day for us is a surprise. It was very, very strong in individual time trial. Was close to take the pin jersey. I think till now he has a lot of possibility to do GC also in the big tour, also for the future. Now he's a leader. What happened this day, we don't know, but sure, he's also here for learn a lot for the big tour.
Well, it's into the unknown, really, for Bob Jungels, isn't it? Because he's leading a Grand Tour for the first time, and he doesn't know the course, really, tomorrow. He hasn't been to see any of these climbs. He doesn't know the roads. He's not raced on them before. So he's going to come under a lot of pressure when the GC riders start attacking, whether they attack going up or whether they attack going down. It's going to be tricky to see him in pink tomorrow night. I would say that would be an astonishing ride if he was still in pink tomorrow. What do you reckon?
Well, I'm more interested to know, if it's not going to be Jungels, Chiro, who are going to be the outsiders that are really going to come to the fore in the next few days? Is it Chavez? Is the outsider the jolly? Is it Chavez? Is it Zakarin? Is it Micah?
Maybe Chavez, the first one. Micah, the second one. And Zakarin is the third one. I'm not talking about Amador, because for the moment, I'm convinced that certainly he's really competitive, but in my opinion, the real captain of the Movistar is Valverde, is still Valverde.
Well, you mentioned Rafael Micah there of Tinkoff, Daniel, and he's really been the sleeping policeman of this Giro, hasn't he? He's done very little. You've barely seen him on the TV screens. He's followed the wheels textbook style, really. He's riding the Grand Tour in a very conservative, cautious way, just as he did in the Vuelta last year, really. And a couple of days ago, we caught up with Tristan Hoffmann, the Tinkoff sports director. So let's hear what his verdict on Micah's opening 9 or 10 days or so is. Been a very quiet week for Rafał Majka. Is that just the way you like it?
It was not quiet for us. Okay, maybe there could be some more action, but then in the end, the tempo was so high, so they were dropping from behind. And of course, some guys attacked, so the Tirrenia for Rafa still needs to come. The real big mountains. And yeah, what we see in the sprints, like some guys, Valverde, they have a real punch in the final, so they're a little bit better in that. But when the big mountains come, the time trial uphill, I think that's the Tirrenia of Rafa.
Do you know how he's feeling? Is he riding within himself most of the time when he's following?
He's feeling good. I don't believe he's been over his limits. No. But I said the coming week, the next 2 days, he needs to recover again. And then there's some interesting stages. And if he wants to win the Giro, he needs to try something.
Because it's very similar to how he rode in the Vuelta last year. He came on strong in the final few days.
Yeah, one of his strongest points is that he's very good recovery. We had to wait until the last moment with Astana when they went full. And then, yeah, he could make also the difference there. I hope we don't wait so long. I hope we can do something before. But it depends on how the race. If Astana make the pace so high, yeah, then maybe he cannot attack. But when there's a possibility, we don't hold back. Absolutely.
What did you think of Movistar's tactics yesterday? Because they have Amador and Valverde second and third, and they did try something.
No, Amador went for the jersey, and I think that was a good tactic. And then Etix, they respond to pull with the pink jersey. I think they make a good decision, and they kept the jersey, and probably they will have it for the next 2 days.
But there's no pressure on you, really, because it's only Rafa who's going to be up there in those kind of groups when the sort-out happens.
Pavel Polyanski, struggling a little bit in the first week. Not struggling, was not super, but yesterday he was up there with the 20 guys, and I expect him to be better and better. So I hope he will be a great support like the other ones. Also, but he will be the last man with Rafa. And what we saw yesterday, 100 guys were left after when they went full on the first climb, and we had all the guys in the first group. So in general, the level is pretty good, but we have to also be realistic. Maybe we're not that level like Astana. They have some really strong riders, but I believe the riders will do a good job in the last week.
Tell me what Rafał Majka is like. Is he? What's his character, and what's he like as a team leader?
I remember when he came as a young kid, he came to a training camp. They went full on a mountain, and suddenly he was third on the mountain. He was following Alberto, and everybody was like, whoa, that's a big talent. And then he seriously developed as a leader. He has his focus. He's very professional. No, he has all the elements to be a good GC rider.
The thing is, all the focus is on Nibali Valverde, and it is condensing down to a race between those two. But there's plenty of wild cards, plenty of jokers in the pack still, isn't there, Daniel?
Yeah, you almost feel as though these guys like Zakarin and Micah, they're able to fly under the radar, partly because they get so little media attention. And we're partly guilty in that because, you know, they don't speak English. They don't speak, in some cases, Zakarin doesn't even speak particularly good Italian. And not all that much is known about, well, certainly Zakarin. And yet you feel, as I said a few days ago, that one of those two could have their real breakthrough in a Grand Tour at any moment. And Zakarin in particular, he's very good against the watch. I think he'll probably be good in the uphill time trial to Alpe di Siusi. And, you know, he did crash in the time trial, but it doesn't seem to have affected him too much physically. And not the strongest team, but there hasn't been that much pressure on his team so far. And the same with Micah. You know, no one's looking to those teams to work.
Yes, but for my last words in this podcast of today, I can anticipate you listeners about Zakarin. Certainly, Daniel, I agree with you. We don't know a lot about him. But on Gazzetta edition of tomorrow, there will be a big story, a big page on Ilnur Zakarin.
Can you give us anything, Ciro? Can you...
Oh, look at that smile.
Unfortunately, not, because I'm not going to write this story. There will be my colleague Claudio Gregori, our man of experience in this Giro. And so I'm also curious to read it.
Wow. Well, Ciro's off with a smile.
With a cackle.
With a cackle. I mean, he's just dropped that one on us. We should probably wrap it up there, Daniel. It's been a busy old podcast. A couple of stellar performances from our hired help today.
And a couple of fairly dour ones from our regulars, and you.
We've had a bit of a day, haven't we, Daniel? You've been very busy working on a Kilometre Zero, which is coming out, which is going to educate me on all the things I get wrong about the mountains of Italy. And I lost my laptop charger yesterday, and that really dominated the last 12 to sort of 18 hours, and until I got to the... to a computer shop near Venice, I was really on edge. I wasn't settled. It was like, I just...
We are, but like, as I said earlier, it's kind of like, it reminds me of those episodes of Blackadder Goes Forth, particularly, I think, was it the penultimate episode or the last episode?
The last one, yeah.
Blackadder and Baldric, I don't know who would take on which role there. They're waiting in the trenches, ready for the final push over the top. Mm. And it really feels like that as far as this Giro is concerned, because this was really the last very, very quiet day. And then we've got this very intimidating weekend for the riders coming up. And I think, as I've mentioned before in the podcast, at this Giro, that the people in the know, and certainly Mauro Vegni, who is responsible for designing the course, felt that this weekend has been underappreciated and underhyped. And, you know, we've got the stage tomorrow, which I'm really looking forward to Cividale del Friuli, and climbs that not many people in the field will know. Steep, and the descents are really gnarly, twisty, dangerous, tree-lined all the way. And, you know, it's unfamiliar territory for the Giro. The Giro hasn't spent that much time in Friuli going back over the years. So really curious to see what happens tomorrow. And then, of course, we've got the Dolomite blockbuster as well to Corvara.
Well, I guess that makes me General Melchior then, because I'm not going over the top in the final week. I'm moving my drinks cabinet a bit closer to London. Anyway, just before we go, time to remind you that Kilometre Zero will be out at some point on Friday. That's Daniel's look at the mountains. Don't want to spoil too much about that. There was one released a couple of days ago, My Day with the Orica Green Edge team during the time trial. Quite an interesting listen if you want to know what goes on behind the scenes on time trial day, particularly with a time trial coming up on Sunday. And a plug for our Friends of the Podcast scheme. If you've been enjoying these podcasts, all of the infrastructure that's enabled us to commit to coming to the Giro is the number of Friends of the Podcast who've signed up to help support us this year. We're providing 11 episodes, special episodes, exclusively for Friends of the Podcast, and there's going to be a really quite a special one after this Giro d'Italia, because the Cannondale rider Joe Dombrowski is recording an audio diary as he goes through the Giro, and that will be released a week or 10 days after the race. So look out for that. If you want to sign up, go to thecyclingpodcast.com. It's £10 for the year. Can't say fairer than that, I would say. So shall we go to our hotel, Daniel, and have a nice relaxing evening? Or
got plenty of work still to do, but yeah, let's try at least.
Okay, thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Lionel.